Hello and welcome to Too Rash, Too Unadvised. I swear this is the last one before we start Necessity. My name is Liam Nolan.
Mine's Wero Kariuki.
And today we are discussing The Philosopher Kings. If you have any questions or want to come be on the show, please feel free to reach out to us at 2-5.gmail.com. That's 2 is the number 2, and I'll be checking the rest of the spoilers, please. I'll support us, more importantly, on our Patreon. With that out of the way, and many thanks to our Lord and the wisest mortal, Martyr.
A fool. Who jurors? I insist you sentenced to death.
Let's get on with the show. Okay, so I reread Just City.
You reread Just City.
I reread... yeah. I don't know. When I started this one, I don't have as many notes as I did last time. I powered through it today. And the first few chapters, I was thinking I was enjoying Philosopher Kings more than I enjoyed most of Just City. And then the middle dragged a bit. But you know what? I did like the ending better on the reread. All in all,
Is that your review?
I think so.
Just that sound. Okay.
It has moments that are really fun. Like, it is not unpleasant to read most of the time. But it's really not grabbing me the way that our last series did, even at speed.
Okay. So we have, I think, I have a couple things to ask you about. How did the Maya chapters now, on like a reread, come through?
What do you mean? What about them?
Well, often they came with, there was much less of them than they were last book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And usually they were like, I found, sort of placed. They often question things about, like, how they should do the Republic, etc., that you later complained that we talked about, but, like, this happened to so long ago that, like, you know, you forgot.
You know what? I didn't even notice as I was reading it that that was a thing that was happening.
What do you think about the new character on a fast reread? How did you think about the arc of,
Arete?
Arete, yeah.
I thought when I reread it that I would pick up on what Arete's powers were supposed to be about. My best guess is that they are something to do with learning or excellence. But I don't like that guess, because both of them seem bad. Arete comes across on the reread as more childish than I was giving them credit for, I think. When we read through it the first time, I was interpreting them, despite their age, as being sort of an adult with complicated thoughts and good ideas that I should pay attention to. And they read as a little more teenager at pace, I found. That was the big shift in my opinions on Arete, going through this quickly.
And what do you think about her romance arc? As contrasted to Samaya's. Yeah.
I think it could have been cut, and we would have lost almost nothing.
Well, I think it's interesting to contrast it with Samaya's, right? With her mother's. Samaya's romance with Pythias is important in, like, her understanding of herself and her understanding, and her dedicating herself to the city, and her finding bounds on what she'll do for the city. Like, things like that. And we see that, like, she ultimately endorses this, what we find is a romantic and sexual relationship in the context of a platonic city. But we don't get that with Arete.
Sure, yeah, we don't get that with Arete. It seems less important to Arete's character.
Okay, but what we do get instead is her finding these feelings and then progressively through the story, progressively through the story, mastering them and, like, making sure she doesn't feel them around people. Like, it doesn't interfere with her, she does. She doesn't get
it. Does the... a little bit, though.
I agree, it does. She does do that. But that's, like, her, she's learning. She's, at the beginning, afraid and never tries to really give in. And the one time she says, she tries to explore with the person immediately shuts her down. And instead we have her going back to her family instead of trying to have a relationship with someone else. That is like Semele's relationship with Pythias. With Pythias.
Well, I guess I don't need to make that criticism. I would argue that Irina has less going on than Pythias did. Pythias is a much more interesting character than I found Irina to be. But Irina is also older, and Arete is a small child who is infatuated with them. And Irina, frankly, probably made the right call in not letting that continue for too long. So, you know, yeah, it's a thing that happens.
I think Irina is like 18? Maybe, yeah, 18.
Irina is old enough that Arete being freaked out by her siblings having the same gap is worth noting. Whatever age they are living in a city where at least somebody thinks it's weird and creepy to be in a relationship with that age spread. And that person is Arete, except it's fine when she does it, I suppose.
Yeah, but Arete, we also have the note where, like, it's specifically commented on immediately, and the age spread is not that big. Well, yeah, it was 14 and 18, I think. Is, like, was just not possible for, like, most of everybody's experience. For, like, truly 40 years, it was not possible to have this age spread that either existed, either it was, like, 20 years, or it was, like, one. And, oh, like a half a year. And now we have a situation that's where, not, like...
That's not true. The masters were normal ages.
The youngest master was 20.
Yeah.
When they were 10.
Not that way. I mean that the masters could have... The intra-master relationships existed.
Intra-master relationships existed, but they were all, like, the youngest master was 20. They were all, like, adults.
Yeah. Well, Irina's an adult.
Irina is an adult, but, like, Arete is going to be an adult by the end of the book, right? According to their society.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Listen, if Arete hadn't noted that Arete thought it was weird when someone else did it, I would ignore this as an element of their relationship. But, like, they kind of brought it up. They introduced the problem, and I'm willing to hold them to that.
That's fair. Irina also brings it up.
Yeah, because it seems like it's a reasonable thing in their circumstance. You know, to worry about. I don't know. You know, Arete is not owed Arita's affection. This
I
seems
agree.
Fine.
But it's interesting to see where they lie. Because they also have, like, Arete has a family she can go back to, where this is, like, simply not a thing. Semele has.
Irina has. Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah. Do you think going back to the family is really important, though? Was Arete ever meaningfully leaving their family, or were they literally on the other side of a small boat?
I don't think there was ever a risk of them leaving their family, but I think the presence of a family with whom she can have these sorts of intense emotional relationships, which she can discuss philosophy and a situation, etc., matter, because the person who did that for Pythias and Semele were each other.
Socrates.
Yeah, and then Socrates went away.
Socrates did go away at some point. I object to this notion that you need a family to have someone to discuss philosophy with in the Just City. It's been made very clear that if you even mention you have a personal problem too close to Ikaros, for example, he will call in a debate team to sort it out.
Mm-hmm. So, like, it could be the case, for example, it could be the case, for example, that there are things she needs to keep secret from people, but she wants to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the
like the god stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree that the deity element is making Arete's life harder in most ways, and not easier in very many. If they were in a completely different circumstance, then the god stuff would be really helpful. But being on the Just City, the flying isn't getting to her very much. Neither is her ability to discern the truth or languages. Everyone speaks the same two languages. It comes up only late at the very end with aliens?
Yeah.
Seems convenient for that, but, you know.
Yeah, everyone speaks the same Greek. Doubtlessly helped by, well, there's a point where, like, they meet a group of people, right, who don't speak Greek, but she doesn't have her powers yet, and they have, like, one slave who speaks Greek, maybe. And it was like,
and it doesn't seem to be very well. On the other hand,
well, no.
I was not sure that they didn't speak Greek, as opposed to the Just City not be speaking Greek properly.
Greek has a long history. They are in the Bronze Age. It could just be old Greek. If some guy came up to you and spoke Middle English, you would think they had like either an insane accent or speaking English badly.
I would not be able to understand. I've tried. I cannot make heads or tails of anything but modern English. That
Wait. Have you tried Chaucer? Chaucer is not... Chaucer comes off as English, but weird. What?
Does it?
Yeah.
I have seen excerpts from Chaucer, and it was completely unintelligible.
No, you have to read it. That's the thing with Chaucer. You have to read it. Like, out loud.
Hang on, I'm looking it up. Let's see what we got here. Excerpts from the Canterbury Tales, Random House, perfect. Okay, this is all normal English, never mind.
I want the original text. On Wikisource, they have Chaucer. Okay.
I've just opened Knight's Tale.
Yeah.
That's Latin, it's opening with. Okay, you know what? This is more intelligible than I recall it being.
Yeah.
But well, I mean...
Wylom is...
That Gretter was their noon under the soon.
Sun.
Well, I got nothing.
What?
Sun.
There was Gretter? None greater than the sun.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. Oh, okay. That tracks.
Full many a which country had he won. He conquered all the reign of Femini. That Wylam was eclipsed Kyria, and wedded the great queen Eppolita, and brought her home with him in his country, with much glory and great solemnity, and eke her young singer, young sister Emily, and thus the victory and melody, leave to the first, this noble duke to King Athens ride, and all his host in arms with him beside.
Okay, this is way more phonetic than I was under the impression it was.
No, I'm butchering it. This is pre great vowel shift. All these vowels are different. I'm actively translating.
Okay. You know what? I might be able to get through this if I had 20 minutes.
Yeah.
This isn't that bad.
Yeah. And Chaucer is like late Middle English. Like late Middle English, like just before the switch. And you do it through the act of translation, and you have to be just willing to like, well, this is a rhyme. What's the thing with the rhymes here? And the spellings are just awful. Just so bad. It's before any sort of standardization of any kind.
Yeah, that wife and life as WYF and LYF, I wouldn't have put that together unless I was really reaching for it.
And you have to do context things. A part of it is that I've read this a couple times before. I did pull the trick when I was trying to convince an Italian guy I knew that Chaucer had literary merit comparable to Dante. Yeah.
I mean, come on, though. Comparable to Monarchia?
Oh, God, it's before I even read Monarchia. When I believe that he was good at some things, probably.
That still might be one of the more fun things we have read for this podcast.
Deeply upsetting. Yeah, so we, that could have helped, but it never got to the situation.
Right, so yeah, I'm not convinced they found someone who didn't speak Greek. I think they speak butchered Greek and struggled with it.
I think they speak, like, classical Greek, which won't happen for another, like, few hundred years.
I don't know why you think they would be good at classical... Oh, wait, no, they have...
They have people from Athens.
They for sure do. They have Cicero, it's fine.
Well, Cicero can, I don't know, suck it. Nah, that's mean. Cicero, you know, is an ass who spoke Latin. Who spoke some Greek, sure, but, like, also, he's from, like, an age past classical Greece. And end up where you get, like, Koine Greek. But,
I'm pretty comfortable with the assertion Credo. That... Oh, that's right, they do have Crito.
Yeah.
I always forget who made the cut. He would know best. Yeah.
Yeah, he would. He would know the language he speaks. He'd know his mother tongue.
For sure, yeah. No, that's fine. I'm on board. Socrates was also there at one point.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was reaching for an actual Greek and settled on someone else.
Yeah. In this of all cities.
I was just going down the power hierarchy, I suppose.
Instead of, like, the closer to Greek. But even Socrates. Yeah, Socrates was there. So I think there's a note early in...
It's just city that we get the VB stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, in modern Greek, beta is often the V sound. V sound. Whereas, like, you know, in classical Greek, you had the B sound. Okay, so we have arete. What do you think about?
We have arete.
Pythias's whole thing.
I don't think he came up with a satisfying answer to the question of why his friend died.
Yeah.
Not friend. Wife.
Also friend.
Sure. Like, he clearly made a decision about stopping the art raids, and then we get, like, a chapter from, I think it's from Maya, isn't it? About mm-hmm. when the art raids started. Yeah, it doesn't come from Semeia, but Semeia's in it.
Yeah.
I just don't buy it that this is what Semeia was talking about. I find the resolution to this mystery deeply unsatisfying.
I think it isn't. I think it's true that Semeia would want the art race to stop. And it's good that he wants that race to stop and is going to stop them. But I think that's not, like,
sure.
why she died.
Yeah, I totally agree. Semeia probably would want the art raids to stop. The art raids weren't a very good idea. They shouldn't have been doing them.
Yes.
Okay. But that wasn't the question.
Well, it ends up being part of... Because there's a sort of narrow question of, like, what did she mean when she died? And also, what should I do with her death? These are related, but they're not that related, because we see, like, immediately... Apollo's like, well, I bet, you know what I should do about her death? I should go kill some people. I think she would hate and did not die for at all. No siree.
Sure. Sure. I guess my takeaway is that Pythias was really mad and then got an obvious target of his anger in Kebes
mm-hmm.
and then skinned him alive and then was kind of done with being mad, so latched on to the first sort of okay-sounding idea that popped into his head. And I guess broadly, Semeia should be disappointed in him for not figuring out what she meant.
Well, does she mean anything? That's another question, right? At some point, someone suggests maybe she was just, like, treating you as a person and is like, please, husband, don't commit suicide over me.
Yeah, I don't buy that. No, that seems very silly. She knows how the god stuff works. He'd have been fine. He'd be back in 10 minutes.
She was in shock. She had just been stabbed with an arrow.
Yeah, but it's Semeia. No.
We know that sometimes she can be injured so much her reason is not great.
That's true, but you know what it takes to do that? It's a birth so physically devastating. She was bleeding for like 2 months. That's what it took. And even then, she was reflective about it as it was happening. I think getting hit with an arrow, while speaking coherently the whole time.
She didn't.
Quietly, but coherently. She said, don't be an idiot, quote, crisply, and then took swift, decisive action. She knew what was going on.
She said something before which she couldn't hear, because she was mumbling.
Yeah, well, she had a punctured lung. This isn't a... It's hard to project, man. Cut some slack.
And then we also get, like, this is part of a lifetime that was made to teach him how to, that other people mattered, right? What do you think this experience is teaching him?
Well, clearly there's some value in forcing him to go through, like, the process of grief so that he can learn lessons maybe about how it is for humans to lose other humans, so he's less tempted to, I don't know, to pick a random example, skin one alive in front of his family. But, you know, he could have just come back and done another one.
Another life?
I agree he got something out of this. I'm unconvinced that the book has told us what Semeya was thinking. Maybe the next one will give us some more about that. I will be astounded if we don't see... if we don't see Semeya in Necessity, which I now think might take place in the future and not as a retread of the previous books. Mostly because it gives us a reason for Semeya and Apollo to meet out in the stars, as has been set up so many times in this series.
Okay, but like, what do you... Sure. What do you think of, like... What else do I want to talk about? The cities. Do you have any new revelations about, like, how the post-debate society has evolved on the island?
Not really. We read this one so recently. Mm-hmm. It just like with the others, it's the distance that makes the rereads give you more info. I think the City of the Amazons was pitched as being more about equality early on than I think was justified. They wound up, to my eye, not really being about the fundamental principle of gender equality by the time we kind of got to the end of the book. But, you know, sure, it was there.
What were they about?
Christianity?
Christianity, or...
But, you know, the Pico version?
Pico's specific bullshit thing.
Hey, you don't know what he says. It could be good.
We know what he says! We've read part of it!
In excess of 900 theses that I have yet to read, they might all be legitimate. He's pretty close to right, too, frankly.
That's true. In this world, he's, like, pretty close to right. And I think, like... To call Pico Christian is to, like, not sell him, give him the correct amount of credit, I think. He really does think all these witnesses are simultaneously true.
If I understand correctly, based on some conversations I had recently with a pastor, if you believe in and accept the salvation of Jesus Christ, then you count as a Christian. So he counts as a Christian.
Does he believe in the salvation of Jesus Christ?
I think so.
Why?
I'm pretty sure he does think Jesus is an element of the One.
But he also thinks that about Zeus and Athens.
Yes, he also believes in Zeus, but I don't... So what?
Okay, but...
I was not told that Christianity is about not believing in Zeus. I was told by an expert that it's about believing in Jesus. It's a positive test.
Okay. But the salvation bit is also really important there. The Christians believe that at Golgotha, the hill where Jesus was crucified, something occurred, physically or metaphysically or spiritually, so that you are now saved.
I... Oh, No, I think Pico believes that the degree to which you are saved by your position on the earth is consistent both before and after Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. Man is still able to rise and fall, whether or not Jesus did anything. But he does believe in Jesus, and I think he believes in salvation, or at least he would say he believes in salvation, even if he's using the word in a way that your classic Christians might not quite expect.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know.
But, yeah, so I just checked with somebody, like, this weekend, and it sounds like it counts.
No, it does not count, Liam.
Well, I didn't realize I needed to specifically back up Pico on this, or I would have brought up Pico. I just caught somebody. You know, what was I going to say?
You caught an Anglican? Or someone else?
No, Baptist. I've really got to call that basilica and find out if I was baptized sometime. I sent an email about it, and they told me to just place a phone call instead, which I think is weirdly rude.
Well, it's just, they feel like maybe they need to, like, break some news to you, maybe. I think the answer is for that one is probably, yes, you're baptized, and we want to talk to you about it.
Why is that news they need to break? What are they going to say?
Come to church about it.
Ah, nice try. I'm out of town. It's not going to work out.
It'll work out. 1 second. Okay, so we have the City of Amazons being this religion thing. You've seen Pico over 2 books, and you've now read his books. What do you think of his character evolution?
Sorry. I still really like Pico. I'm not convinced he evolves very much. I think the Pico we get at the end of the books is very similar to the Pico we get at the start of the books. He's maybe learned a couple of specific facts, but I think his core character is pretty consistent.
I think that's not true. I think we have actually a lot of reason to believe that's not true, like a variety of aspects here. First of all, we note that, he, from initially being really pretty pagan, so much that he, like, goes to her and is like, we should reject Christian morality as being not necessary, is the person who introduces the closest thing to Christianity the islands have to the island.
I think it's best to think of Pico not as pagan or Christian, but a follower of his own
different monotheistic god
philosophical position. I don't know how I want to describe Pico's religion.
But the notable part,
I think,
it's the notable part
is Yeah,
the notable part to everyone else is that it has Christianity, because they don't know. These people don't know what Buddhism is mostly, and they don't know what Zoroastrianism involves, and none of them are Jewish. But a lot of them did interact with Christianity, and they know the Christian parts of Pico.
Yeah, but I don't think what we're seeing is Pico converting from paganism to Christianity. I think he has the whole time been a devoted follower of his own opinions, and they change, but I think Pico would describe that as a changing of the facts as he understood them, and not any real underlying philosophical movement.
I think that it's only true as far as he thinks everything can be reconciled. It's like what parts sort of gain dominance of other parts change with time. But also, like, we also see, like, he goes, he spends a lot of time trying to learn about what he possibly did wrong. He was from being very confident in himself and in his movement in social situations to, like, being pretty reticent to, like, you know, not pretty reticent, but, like, having doubts.
Yeah, what he thought he knew a thing and it turned out that thing was wrong. That seems fine. Doesn't seem like a big uh-oh.
I don't think it's a big problem. I'm not trying to get you to vote up or down on Pico, Liam. It's fine if he changes his mind about something.
No, but what I mean is, I think what he's changing his mind about is, like, facts of the matter and not character traits.
Those aren't?
I think Pico at the end of the book is exactly the same Pico from the start of the book, but he knows a few additional facts, which have not changed his underlying belief system. Whereas, Samea at the start of Just City is missing many facts, but when she starts the book, she doesn't care very much at all about pursuing excellence. She's just some random kid, and by the end of the book, it's a core element of her character.
I think seeing how characters react to certain facts can reveal elements of their character. Like, for example, that he was wrong about his relationship with Maya. That can reveal that he deeply cares about arguing. And reveal the extent to which, like, he's willing to go put himself out there to try to, like, solve his relationship, which he cares a lot about.
But that's not a character change.
Or any personal decision. Could be on the basis of a philosophical connection. Opposition that she's providing. Which reveals something more about his character.
But that isn't a character change.
I'm not saying it's a character change.
Yes, you were. Check the tape.
I just started a new line of discussion, Liam.
Fine. Yes, things are revealed. Pico's very fun. I wish there was more Pico.
So we can learn, for example, that he's willing to try to solve his personal relationship because it threatens intellectual one. Or we can learn that he is afraid of revealing physical difficulties.
Well, yeah, but we know why that. He's afraid to reveal physical difficulties because they would implicate him in a crime. Not just a crime against the laws of the city, a crime against time.
He can just be blind, Liam, and that wouldn't be that weird that an old man is blind.
The nature of his blindness is immediately identifiable as due to reading too much in bad light.
Which, first of all, he just does that anyway a lot of the time. He just has books, has light, and reads. He loves reading. Second, it's immediately identifiable to the one person who put him up to the specific task.
I bet Samea could have figured it out.
Okay.
As could Socrates. And through implication, there must also be others in the Just City who could have figured it out.
Mm-hmm. It is notable that it's not, like, that secret that he's blind. Like, the blindness is the only thing. The fact that he's blind is not the linchpin in his, like, grand deception of the cities. But he's still afraid to tell people.
Perhaps he's simply worried about the ongoing war of man against man.
That's true, he did
steal... Or in the city of the Amazons, man against woman.
Man and woman against other people.
Sure, but that doesn't fit as neatly into the phrasing. Okay. So.
Well, this that means that Pico is a woman in this analogy, but in any case, do you think Pico stole the head of Nike?
Like, personally?
No. Do you think he should be blamed for it?
Not except insofar as he is a representative of the city which stole it, and therefore responsible for its actions.
So, like, maybe a lot? Because it's shown that he has a pretty heavy political control over the city?
I think the head was stolen without Pico's involvement or acceptance or consultation. And I don't think he would have wanted them to do it, and I think he would have told them not to do it had anyone asked him.
Mm-hmm.
But he does appear to be, like, meaningfully a representative of the city, and that he practically runs the place. And therefore, I think it's fair to hold him responsible in that sense, but not, like, a direct personal one.
Sure. Why are we talking about?
I think Pythias learned a valuable lesson here which is that he shouldn't have gone around explaining he would murder whoever took the head before he found out who did it.
Murder comes later.
Clearly, this could have been resolved much sooner if no one was afraid to tell Pythias who took the head, which he could have made be the case, but failed to.
It's true. You talked about, has rereading this book given you any sort of new revelation on the nature of time or the gods?
Not really. I no longer buy my necessity theories that I was invested in. I'm pretty sure I do understand how mysteries work, and its father understands them, but no one else does. I'm pretty on board for the version of time I think we settled on, which is that time is a location, and I don't like it, but that just seems to be how it works. No, I don't think I came to any new revelations about the nature of time, the gods,
genuinely,
or mysteries.
Genuinely, I did not know you accepted the time of the location argument. We've had discussed that twice, and it was never clear to me that you accepted it.
I don't know if I had fully come around when we were talking about it on air, but over the course of the reading and thinking about it more off the podcast, yeah, at some point I got convinced.
Okay. We have some... what do I want to say here? You earlier made the reference to, like, her Arete's powers being about something.
Yeah.
Why?
Because the other powers have a more obvious theme. Electricity. Volcanoes. And then there's Arete, who can understand intent? Something like that? Languages and truth? I don't know. The flying really throws me off. I don't know how flying is supposed to fit in. Otherwise, it would be really easy to say that Arete's powers are about, like, interpersonal communication, or understanding the nature of intent, or what people are trying to do, and maybe you can fit that into, like, Arete has powers that cover the domain of, or work, or struggling and sometimes succeeding. But
well,
flying?
We also have that, like, the volcano powers come about because one guy likes volcanoes. Like, he's like, well, I do not want to die. How do I not die? Either be god of something, or maybe the god of volcanoes. That seems like a fine way to live. And so he decides to get powers about volcanoes.
Yeah. But Arete never has a clear goal about that. And it's not obvious that that's how the powers work.
Well,
I know Apollo talks about choosing something, but, like,
well,
is this a choice you make consciously, or is this a choice that the universe makes based on the way you are?
He says he gets a power according to the soul, so in some sense the soul chooses. And we know that the volcano guy gets volcano powers, but, like, for Arete and the lightning guy, Callicles, he just sort of gets powers from, you know... Sometimes gods have weird powers.
I guess Lightning Guy is probably more like Weather Guy.
But even then, he's not like, can be the god of weather. That's Zeus.
Yeah, I'm surprised Zeus was cool with it. I don't know, he seems surprisingly reasonable in the chapter where he shows up.
What do you think of their new governance? Now that you've reread the ending, what do you think of the new arguments? I remember we did talk about that a lot, but I remember... thinking probably you would have. Did you have any new thoughts about the political situation or no?
What specifically about it? That they're, Neleus is taking over? Or?
The pan-city voting system, theories
I'm
on
skeptical
the, like,
of how we're setting up something that sounds a lot like a central government. But, you know, you get what you get, I guess.
I don't know how you could have a...
I don't think what the Just City needed was to be more like the EU. What do you mean? Why are you saying it like that?
I don't know. It feels like you're looking for reasons to be angry about this in terms of, like, a naturalized perspective. There's such a long list before this one that, like, this one probably doesn't even matter, right? Like, what? Oh no, the different authoritarian states are joined together into a league of authoritarianism? Okay, they're already authoritarian.
Maybe one of them could change. But they didn't.
One of them did change!
Did they become a ANCAP utopia?
No, the Socratia is not a utopia of natural rights.
What did Socratia end up doing? Remind me.
They argue everything.
Oh, yeah. No, that one's still pretty good. A thumbs up to them. Good way to structure a government. Yeah, I don't know. You know what? I think, all in all, my big objection to this book is that even while trying, I just can't get very worked up about it. Even most of my complaints, even, are they're kind of half-hearted, if I'm being honest. They're, you know, it's fine. The book does what it wants to do. It's all right.
Okay.
This is maybe the worst opinion you can have about a book as someone who's doing a podcast about it. Because if it was great, that'd be one thing. And if it was terrible, I would at least be able to yell properly. But my genuine reaction to rereading Just City and now reading Philosopher Kings is, you know, they're sure books.
Okay.
I'm not offended by them.
I have questions about the long-term things about the cities. So we have in... We talked a little bit at the end of the under this book, right, about how Arete would be shamed to not be a gold.
Yeah.
Do we have we have families now, and these families, people have to perform in front of those families, and people who go to grade are going to know that these families are going to have reactions to certain classifications of their children. Do you think we're on our way to classical aristocracy instead of this aristocracy?
Sorry, ask that question again.
Do you think we're going to have a rise of nepotism and stuff? Do you think people are going to form factions based on family instead of based on something else?
Yeah, absolutely. What? Of course.
Interesting. Why do you say that?
Do you not?
I'm asking.
They're doing the Just City. That half of this program is building in eugenics so that you can end up with only the best people together with the best people. There's no way Pythias doesn't establish a family line that will inevitably, you know, consolidate power. For sure. Yeah, the city seems really well equipped for that. There were stuff in place before everything fell apart to try to make sure that didn't happen.
But now.
But I see they threw it away. They don't have those anymore. It's for sure it's going to come up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. And speaking of family, we have our first revelation of a platonic family. Talking about Timaea and Pythias' family. And we see them argue a ton. What do you think of Pythias as a father? Granted that
he doesn't seem to be very careful about it.
What do you mean?
I think he systematically fails to give his children important information for reasons he thinks are good but probably aren't. Maybe related to his experience being a god and actually knowing things. But similarly, I think he's probably trying his best, and most of his kids seem to turn out pretty good anyway.
Do you have an exception?
I don't think I do, but I'm not convinced I remember all of the children well enough to say that I agree with all of them. There's a lot of kids, and they're not always relevant to the story.
Nellius, because Nellius is not him. Callicles?
Nellius is great.
Callicles, Arete, Alcibiades...
Alcibiades is the one who went off to do the Just City correctly, right?
To go to Athena, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Porphyry, who he's not really in the life of, and I'm missing one in the city. You know I am. Here we are. Phaedrus.
Porphyry seems to be doing fine. What was Phaedrus's deal?
Phaedrus was black. Phaedrus had volcano powers.
Oh, the volcano fell. Okay. Yeah, his kids all turned out fine. They're fine.
And there's one in Psyche, I think.
Maybe that one's a bit of a fuck up. Could be.
He's a silver.
Actually, you know what? Now that I'm talking through this, I think definitely he needs to be discredited for how terribly he let his children treat Neleus, his other child. Like, that was a huge black mark on this record.
And it's not, like, not on his radar, right? He does say that, like, you know, we were worried about this.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it better, because sure. He doesn't actually stop it.
Well, no, it makes it worse, because he knew it was a possibility.
Yeah. So there's that. He did not do a good job there. Neleus, though, doing great. He did deserve to get in charge.
Speaking of Neleus, we also...
I think I didn't realize...
We also get...
No, yeah, go.
Sorry.
Proceed.
With Neleus, right, we get the sort of, like... Neleus is systematically excluded from a lot of discussions of the journey, and yet is the person who's first going to, like, volunteer to kill for Samaea.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the plan before the thing? They, like, rigged the vote.
I think a lot of this book is the story of this one journey to go find and then skin a guy. And I think that trip is important to the characters, but probably should never have happened.
Sure. Given that...
Like the going was a mistake.
Given that, and also given, like, okay, so this journey shouldn't have happened. What do you think it says about all of our characters if they all really want to go on this journey?
I think most of the other characters are fine. Ficino totally
know.
Legitimate. He just wanted to explore, and that's an okay reason to go on a trip.
Yeah.
Arete expected it to be peaceful.
I did not expect it
sure,
to be peaceful.
Sure, that's an okay reason to go on a trip.
Arete went to prevent the violence she expected.
Yeah, but by going, figured it would be peaceful. The real mistake everyone made was letting Pythias leave. Pythias should never have gone. Most of his kids, the more vengeancey ones, should not have been allowed to go.
Which are the more vengeancey ones? We don't see the same sort of anger. Like, Neleus is like, first thing he does, I think, him or Phaedrus, they are trying to help deal with Pythias' grief. It is only after being systematically excluded from the family that Neleus is like, Neleus decides to kill the person who he thinks may have killed his mother.
I'm unconvinced of that argument. I think Neleus has been systematically excluded from the family the whole time.
There's a difference between, like, being mean and, like, everyone else is going off in corners to talk, and you can tell, but they're not including you.
Yeah. He's the more vengeancey one. Listen, the mistake was that this was not actually a peaceful expedition. Probably because Pythias didn't have anyone who was able to rein him in. There weren't enough checks and balances on Pythias' personal power.
What do you mean? He was in a council
that confines of the just city.
Could be outvoted, and was consistently outvoted.
And yet he wound up on the boat anyway. Mistake. They should have stopped him.
Yeah.
Pythias was in a place where, frankly, if it meant putting him in jail until the boat was gone, they should have just put him in jail. Because he shot in the foot, their best shot at, like, peaceful trade with neighboring cities.
Yeah.
It kind of worked out by the end, but it sure didn't have to.
I think a lot of it is, like, if you think about, like, what happens, he's been so fine for so long, you think maybe it's okay if you let him maybe meet Cebes. And we know that Cebes couldn't have done the thing at this point. I think we knew that the goodness had been nowhere near the island in the time period. You're like, probably it's fine now. And then Pythias meets Kerberos, reveals a whole nother reason he wants to kill Kerberos. Kerberos is into this, and then you can't really recover from that.
Yeah, there were reasons that this spun out of the control of people who tried. I'm just saying they should have accounted for things they didn't know earlier.
But it's not letting him to go on the trip.
He shouldn't have been allowed on the trip.
Well, okay. He shouldn't have been allowed on the trip, but clearly he doesn't think so. He made himself go on the trip.
Yeah.
That was his life that he chose.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
I'm unconvinced he increased his excellence with this move. I think this was just petty revenge.
Well, being a god is not about increasing your excellence. It's about people recording what you did on your lowest days of your life and telling that story forever.
I think this circumstance, what Pythias is doing, what Apollo is doing by being Pythias, is about increasing his excellence.
Well, it's about
even
learning a certain
thing. Being a god, typically speaking, is not about that.
Well, it's certainly about learning a thing, right?
He talks about his mortal experience. Go.
Do you think he learned anything?
Yes. He learned that when you skin someone from the Just City, you don't get to keep the skin, even if you get it all off before they die.
So you think that this is, like, not helpful in his journey? Like, he didn't, like, learn about something by doing this? By learning about equal significance by doing this?
Yeah, I don't think he learned about equal significance by doing... Maybe there were one or two things on the trip that are slipping my mind, but I think, broadly speaking, his trip did not teach him about equal significance, except insofar as it satisfied his personal need for revenge, and then let him pick a thing that he decided is what Samea would want to go do next.
Mm-hmm. What? How about his family? Nellius is great, but Nellius did all the things that Pythias did. Like, he went out and skinned a dude.
Yeah, that was a low point for Nellius as well. It's probably bad to skin people because you don't like them.
What are the high points?
I am anti.
Why is Nellius good? At all. Given he, in this story, showed up being vaguely angry, didn't talk a lot, volunteered to rig a contest and skin the person you rig the contest against.
I think what we're seeing of Nellius is a abused child
mm-hmm.
who's trying to make themselves better,
mm-hmm.
But ultimately commits their responsibilities and is well liked by people other than his family, and does okay and eventually assumes a leadership position within his society. And that's fine.
So, like, when you say Nellius is great, it's only an expectation of his future greatness. In this story, he just does bad things. Movies are forgiven because he has this, because he is a special moral exemption because he's being abused.
In this story, Nellius is great primarily when speaking in contrast to the way everyone treats Nellius.
Okay. So because he verbally asserts his dignity in the face of everybody else's assaults on it.
If Nellius was a character who was presented in the story as being treated normally by everyone around him, I would probably agree that Nellius is, like, pretty normal.
Normal? Or...
But instead, this story hates Nellius, and he's fine. He's doing his best.
The story hates Nellius? The story or, like, the people in the story?
Well, the people within the story hate Nellius. I think the story itself is medium on him.
Okay. What do you make of the Iliad things that Johnny and you are picking up on?
Now I think I was just wrong, and none of that was happening.
Okay. But in what way were you wrong? What do you think about the Iliad
things
now?
I was pattern matching to a pattern that didn't exist. Okay. Trojan War might happen later, but I don't think we see it happen, or really see the events put in place that lead to its necessity.
Mm-hmm.
People know about it for sure in the story, but I don't think that this meaningfully parallels the Trojan War now that I've seen the whole thing.
Yeah, I think Well, I think it does in some, but it's not the sort of extreme level of like it of pastiche we're used to.
I mean, I guess technically something was stolen from someone who was mad about it. But it's a real stretch.
That's not the stretch I would make.
I don't think you can make
the stretch I would make
in good conscience
is the Achilles to Pythias stretch.
It's still, I don't know. I don't love it.
I think it's really perilous.
I don't think we need Achilles to understand what is happening with Pythias.
I agree. Because it's not a pastiche.
I'm unconvinced it helps.
It's a parallel
to understand what's happening with Pythias.
Yeah, it's not.
But it's a very broad parallel. There are similar parallels in almost every story.
That's not true. Both Achilles and Pythias lose someone close to them after they, of their own volition, go into danger. Both Achilles and Pythias blame somebody who, at best, was only loosely connected to any sort of harm to the death.
Mm-hmm.
Who they had a pre-existing conflict with. Both Pythias and Achilles get angry past the point of all reason and exact this anger to the shock and horror of their surrounding society on the person who they hate.
Let me make you a comparable point by net word count. So you know the fable with the fox and the grapes?
Yeah.
Okay, so we start right with the fox. Mm-hmm. And at first he has some grapes, but then the grapes that were close are gone, and he can't get at the ones that are higher up. And this makes him unreasonably angry, and he gets really, really upset that he can't have any of the grapes, and winds up in his anger storming off and harming himself more than anyone else. That's basically Achilles.
I think the parallels are a lot looser. I can pick out particular characters, match the other characters. Particular scenes that match other scenes.
Well, but I mean, the fox and the grapes, that's a very short story. I have like half the words in my parallels.
I don't know if that's how we should judge parallels.
By net word count, I'm coming out ahead.
I think there's a parallel between the Iliad and the story. There's that parallel that Johnny was talking about.
Which one was Johnny talking about? I don't, remind me.
Oh god, one second.
Okay.
The Marseillais.
And? Oh, the story, yeah.
Yeah.
That one was good, yeah. That's much more direct than...
Yes.
The other stuff. That one's right there.
Well, I think we've talked about how Marseillais works. Marseillais is a person who challenges Apollo to a duel, to a musical contest, with the same terms that Apollo and Cebes get. Marseillais plays a music which is so irresistibly dance-worthy, much the same way that the jazz is described in this book. Apollo plays a tune on his lyre, and then after Marseillais almost wins the first round, Apollo turns the lyre upside down and plays the same tune, which Marseillais could not do.
You know, I didn't even notice this on the reread, but do we ever figure out how he learned that?
No.
Okay. That, too, I would like to have heard more about. I just assumed it was going to come up when we got the debrief with Athena and Zeus, and it super does not.
Mm-hmm. Does not. 100%. But I also think there's a second thing, which I think I talked about earlier in the previous episode, where, like, the people in the story all are quite classic majors, so they interpret their world, and they know that the world probably is going to happen at some point. so they interpret their world through these stories. It's like Americans comparing things to, like, the American Revolution. Christians talking, comparing things to Bible stories. Like, they just understand the world through the specific lens.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not...
Yeah, and it doesn't fit.
Yeah, they're wrong.
I get it. I also was viewing the world through that lens. It's unfortunate, but it seems to not have been the correct one.
Mm-hmm. Like, the Achilles Pythias comparison is made by Pythias. Pythias.
He notes that he is sympathetic to Achilles at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's when they're on the way out to go.
Yeah. What do you think of the ending?
I liked it better this time, actually. It
mm-hmm.
it felt more like a resolution.
Why?
No clue. Zero idea. Maybe just because I was expecting it and I wasn't waiting to get answers,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that they would not be forthcoming, it was easier to swallow.
Mm-hmm. Man, you have different ways of reading. Sometimes the best books don't give you any answers.
You mean like crossword puzzles?
No. I mean, maybe, but like sometimes they're just like the Iliad has like it uses a dozen questions and answers like none of them.
I'm willing to give the Iliad credit for having them answered in those other books we didn't get to read.
That a lost?
And also have said on air that I think the Iliad is in desperate need of an editor.
But even in terms of the editing, right? Like, even if you cut out the middle parts, even in terms of like the core plot, there is a war, the dozen characters that are introduced suddenly. There's like a dozen plot points introduced. And we resolve a single one, and then it ends.
Yeah, but it's also one of a long series of books, many of which we don't have access to, so I'm less worried about it.
I don't know how much we should believe those other books would resolve these plot points. One of them
Perhaps
is just
they
the
do.
Iliad again.
Is it?
Yeah.
Does the Iliad happen twice?
The Iliad happens twice! Modern talks about
who
it.
Who does Achilles drag around the city the second time?
I forget who, but it's like there's a second character who Achilles who dies and Achilles is angry about.
So this is just an established thing Achilles does sometimes.
Yeah, that's one of the arguments against like considering. Oh my god, how have I forgot his name?
Patroclus?
Patroclus and Achilles to be in a relationship. In a romantic relationship. Because it's not unique.
I think it is not that crazy to interpret them as not being in a romantic relationship.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm very surprised that there is a second Iliad where it all happens again. I wonder what the odds are we find a copy of that. Probably not great.
I'm just trying to figure out. Okay, now this is that I thought maybe it was the Little Iliad, but Iliad is not that bad. It's about how Ajax committed suicide. Not Cyprian, not Achilles. Yeah, Aethiopius.
Wow.
We have five lions. Achilles kills Thersites.
Oh.
Yeah, let me read the summary. We'll go out of this. So it opens after the death of Hector. An Amazon occurs.